Shop, stay, and play local with Hill Country Patriot Advertisers.
There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will bring it to a whisper. For the next hour, sit quietly and we shall control all that you hear. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
And now, it's time for the radio show that covers just about every topic. Because variety is the spice of life. From the arcane and unusual to current events and practical tips. Because if it's interesting, they'll be talking about it. And now, here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
Thank you, Harley. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Good morning, Allison. How are you doing this morning?
I'm okay. How are you, Bill?
You're okay? Just okay?
Just okay.
Oh, I hope you're better than that. But as Harley said, we are Bill and Allison, and we're with you every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. And eight until 10 on Saturday mornings.
And our website is?
FirstCoupleOfTexasRadio.com.
Where you can sign up for our repeated shows, podcasts, and all that kind of stuff. 8:08 is our Hill Country Patriot time, and it's going to warm up today. It doesn't seem like it, but
It was at our house this morning when I got up. It was 52 degrees.
Yeah,
because I was going to put on a heavy sweater.
It'll be in the 70s around the Hill Country area. It's Hill Country Patriot, your information station serving the whole Hill Country. Just to let you know, we are Bill and Allison. We are sometimes wrong,
but we're always right.
Always right. We're always right. Fighting. A never-ending battle for truth, justice.
And the American way.
And the American way. Trigger warning for you, we are non-Bidenary. So if you're looking for Bidenarianism, you won't find it at the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. We always like to start our program with a verse, and this is from Romans chapter 10. If you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God had raised him from the dead, you will be saved. It's a promise. That's a promise. It doesn't say anything about you have to go to church every Sunday and every Wednesday. And,
you should tell them about witnessing to my brother.
I will. Well, I will. It's a good idea. But it doesn't mean you know, it doesn't say anything about even being baptized.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thief on the cross.
Doesn't say, well, that's true. The thief, that's very good, Allison. The thief on the cross. When Jesus went on the cross, there were two men beside him, and one of them confessed belief in Christ. And, of course, highly unlikely that he was a, you know, religious man and right. Little old ladies across the street. He was being executed for crimes he had committed.
Right.
Jesus
was
promised
a thief,
him.
Thief on the cross.
Yeah. Jesus promised him that today you'll be with me in paradise.
But that's what really struck me. I mean, I've obviously heard that many, many times, but it struck me particularly when you were talking to my brother.
Well, yeah, he made the, he was on his deathbed, and but he was very alert, same skip as he always has been, and I read that verse to him, and I said, you know, if you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. And I said that your sister Allison, my wife, and your wife Dev, and myself, we all trust in him and believe that verse, and you know, we're going to, we believe the Lord that we'll be with him in paradise when we die, and we will just be so, and I've used a word I'm not going to use on the air.
Yes, you can use it.
I'm not going to use it. Well, PO'd. I'll use PO'd.
Okay.
If you're not there. It's aggressive witnessing. And he said, probably the best response I've ever heard to presenting the gospel is, how can you not believe? Yeah. How can you not believe? So, it is 8:11, It's our Hill Country Patriot Time, your information station, which is what we are here. And we've got a lot to cover in the next couple of hours. We have not only what's going on in Hill Country, events that you'd like to know about. We're going to talk about the World Economic Forum, and we have a fascinating audio clip explaining in really probably the best explanation of who you've been reading about it. They're meeting in Davos this past week.
Is it still going on?
No, it ended Friday, yesterday.
Okay.
But this is probably the best explanation in very clear terms. So we're going to be talking about that, and it's not from me, it's from someone else. We've got some good news about Bakers and the gay stuff. We're going to talk a lot about, well, not a lot, but we're going to talk about reparations today.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have a very interesting item on reparations.
Oh, okay. And we've got a lot more as we get to it on the Bill and Allison show today, so stay with us. Well, we've got some Texas history for you this week in Texas. Do you, by the way, Allison, this is, very few people know this, and I doubt if you do, but maybe you do. The new capital of the Republic of Texas is now named Austin, but that was not always its name.
Hmm, what was it?
Waterloo.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The original name was Waterloo.
That does sound familiar.
In 1839, it was approved as the new capital of the Republic of Texas. The first capital was Columbia, or what is known now as West Columbia. That only lasted 3 months. Then Houston was the temporary capital, and then the state purchased almost 8,000 acres of Waterloo and adjacent lands, and Austin became, or Waterloo became the capital, and they changed the name, of course, to honor Stephen Austin. Mm-hmm. In 1874, Democrat Richard Koch was inaugurated as the governor of Texas during this week in 1874. Some things never change. The Republican governor, Edmund Davis, said the election was a fraud and he refused to leave his governor's office. See, some things never change. Koch, they say, had overwhelmingly won the election. Of course, that's what they say about a lot of modern politicians. But there were irregularities. The state Supreme Court voided the election. They had more guts than the U.S. Supreme Court did. So Davis said, well, they voided the election. I'm not going to leave office. He called in troops, but they supported his opponent, Koch. So that wasn't good. And then he asked for federal troops from President Grant, who said, no, 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 no. So Davis finally was forced to resign. So, but that took a while. And in 1929... Popeye the Sailor Man first appeared in print. Now, why do I mention that as Texas history?
Yeah.
Because the Victoria Advocate newspaper was the first paper in the nation to publish a Popeye cartoon.
No kidding.
The cartoonist, who was named Elsie Chrysler Segar, called Victoria, Texas, Popeye's hometown.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
That's very cool. I did not know that.
Popeye's hometown is Victoria, Texas.
I did not know that.
Crystal City, Texas, outside of San Antonio, is called the Spinach Capital of the World, and it put up a statue to honor both the cartoonist and Popeye, and that statue is still there in Crystal City. They credited Popeye with a 33% increase in spinach consumption in the 1930s.
Wow.
8:24 is our Hill Country Patriot Time, and now you're up to date with everything going on in the Hill Country, plus you got a little history there. And speaking of history, there was something important that happened in January of 1973, Allison. You know that, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Roe versus Wade, which, of course, is a lot in the news these days.
Should I give information on that right now?
Yeah, sure. It made abortion on demand legal nationally.
Yeah, it was in 1973. The Supreme Court invalidated 50 state laws and made abortion legal on demand throughout the United States in the decisions of Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton. And in January 1974, the first March for Life in Washington, D.C., was held to lobby congressional leadership to find a legislative solution to the Supreme Court decision. Soon they quickly realized that congressional protection of the unborn was not going to be happening. So Nellie Gray, who founded the March for Life, decided to hold it every year until Roe v. Wade is overturned. And but apparently they're still having it, because it's normally on January 21st, which I believe that's when Roe v. Wade was passed. But this year, because the 21st is a Saturday today, it was held yesterday on Friday. And Donald Trump became the first U.S. president to attend the March for Life, although previously Ronald Reagan had spoken.
Yeah, he spoke at
but
it.
He didn't. He didn't.
Reagan was the first one to acknowledge it and speak at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Trump came along. Yeah. Are you done? Is that it?
Oh, okay. Well,
do you want to save it for later?
That's yeah, the organizers say they will continue the March for Life until abortion is outlawed in the entire nation.
Okay.
Because in some states, abortion is legal.
Okay. Cool. Well, we'll have more on that subject when we have a very special guest later coming up, who is a Hill Country Patriot personality that you won't want to miss this one. This is coming up pretty soon in the Bill and Allison Show.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got 8:27 is our Hill Country Patriot time with Bill and Allison. And we're looking at beautiful weather today. And when we come back, we are going to tell you about the most unusual radio there is. It's worn in your private parts. So you got to stay tuned for that.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure if I want to hear that.
Wonderful and great, boldest and grandest, withstanding every test. Oh, empire wide and glorious, you stand supremely blessed. Texas, oh, Texas, your freeborn single star sends out its radiance to nations near and far. Emblem of freedom, it sets our hearts aglow with thoughts of San Jacinto and glorious Alamo. God bless you, Texas, and keep you brave and strong, that you may grow in power and word throughout the ages long. God bless you, Texas, and keep you brave and strong, that you may grow in power and word throughout the ages long.
The Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison, Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
8:31 is our Hill Country Patriot time on a Saturday with Bill and Allison, and we are sometimes wrong.
But we're always right.
Always right. You can depend on that. Well, the World before I get to the World Economic Forum, I want to tell you about the radio. The radio. The most unusual radio. I will try to keep a straight face. The world's most unusual radio, when it's perfected, will be worn in the vagina.
Oh, my God.
I couldn't keep a straight face. And send out electronic signals to the doctor's office when the woman ovulates. I kid you not. I didn't make this up. How could I make that up?
Yeah, really.
It's still in the drawing board stage, but look for it at your local HEB soon. Okay, we've got... as I mentioned, the World Economic Forum held its annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland. And, of course, all of the folks that tell you that you should eat bugs and drive electric cars or take public transportation flew in with their private jets in their ultra-polluting private jets to talk about climate and inequality behind closed doors. They're big on the worldwide disaster. They're climate alarmists. The emissions generated from all their private jets flying in and out of airports in Davos last week, equivalent to those produced by about 350,000 average cars for a week.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the hypocrites. About 1,700 private jets flew into Davos.
Wow. I bet their airport was crowded.
They had to open they overwhelmed the airport. The Swiss Air Force was forced to open up a military airbase for civilian traffic for the private jets. Not forced to, but they did, because, after all, this is the World Economic Forum, right? However, at the World Economic Forum, a fellow named Hans Schnellenuber, sounds like a Nazi to me, he basically is. I mean, once you hear what he said, every person should have a limit of 3 tons of CO2 emissions per year, and those who exceed their limit should be forced to pay a fine. They call it carbon tax, or carbon credits. There's no such thing, really. It's fake. The carbon credit thing is a total scam. If you go over 3 tons per year, you should purchase credits, CO2 credits, from people who have them to give you, I guess, who are under the limit. But the average citizen produces 10 tons of CO2 right now. And there are some of the elite, like with their private jets, produce over 100 tons of CO2 a year and up to 2,000 tons per year, it's estimated.
Wow.
Some of these, you know, like Al Gore and John Kerry flying around the world in their private jet. I got to remember this from memory, but John Kerry created a aviation leasing company that owns the planes that then he pays the leasing company, which is his company, to fly around the world in his private jet.
Well, I heard a description of, what's his name?
John Kerry?
No.
Al Gore?
The head of the World Economic Forum.
Klaus Schwab.
Klaus Schwab. I heard a description of him. It was either by Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity or Laura Ingraham. I don't remember which one, but it was earlier this week. Described him as a James Bond villain.
There you go. Well, if you've ever heard him speak, you can believe that. You know, I'm surprised he doesn't, isn't holding a cat or something, stroking a cat. Well, we talked about this carbon stuff. You know, how are they going to find out how many carbon emissions each person does? Oh, they have that. They have an answer to that.
Wow.
Alibaba, okay, famous big Chinese company, is developing a digital individual carbon footprint tracker to monitor your actions. The head of Alibaba, the Alibaba group, Michael Evans, said, "We are developing through technology to find out," and this is a direct quote, "where people are traveling, how they are traveling, and what they are eating."
Wow.
Yeah. This is in the works.
That's scary stuff.
It's very scary. Well, the World Economic Forum is very scary, and we're going to have a very interesting audio about that in a moment. The World Economic Forum exercises a really creepy influence over world leaders. And it wants a great reset for us, not for them. they don't eat bugs at their buffets. Yeah. Banquets, rather.
I'll bet not.
Yeah. But they want a great reset, so we'll all be living in low energy, high density. We had on the show, if you didn't hear it, a couple of weeks ago, a woman from Oxford, England, talking about the Oxford City Council has passed a law that they want to turn Oxford into what they call a series of 15-minute cities. And this is unbelievable, but the Oxford City Council has done it, and the World Economic Forum is behind it. They want every place in the world to do it. You will be confined to an area where you can walk to. You won't need a car. You can walk to your doctor, to the grocery store, to the kids' school, all within a 15-minute area. And if you want to leave that area to go see your elderly mother or, you know, nursing home or something or a hospital, you have to get permission from the government. And if you don't, they will monitor you.
Well,
and you'll be fined if you leave the area.
A little bit later on in the show, I'll tell you something from 1984, Orwellian, going on in the UK.
Okay. But it's the World Economic Forum wants stuff like that. In eating bugs, yes, they say we should not eat meat, we should eat bugs. And Klaus Schwab exercised a weird influence over world leaders on the left and right. It's too bad I saw Joe Manchin was there, Senator Manchin from West Virginia. It's unpleasant to hear that. So as I said, I've been promising this very interesting audio about the World Economic Forum. So here it is.
Douglas Krueger is a prolific author of 13 books published by Penguin Random House, including one called Political Correctness Does More Harm Than Good. We wanted to ask you, first of all, what is the Great Reset that we're hearing so much about?
Like many of the politically correct ideas that we hear bandied about in the media, this entire project is couched in kindness. It is presented as something that is being done or being proposed for our good and for the greater good. And that always sets my alarms and sensors going, because that tends to lead to very problematic ideology. In a very quick nutshell, the proposal out of Davos is essentially this: a group of exceptionally powerful individuals, predominantly in the banking, finance, and business sector, in alliance with government leadership, are proposing that as a result of these COVID lockdowns that have done a great deal of damage to economies globally, they perceive that they now have an opportunity to rebuild economies, but to do so in what they believe is a more enlightened fashion. And there are, generally speaking, there are problems with the idea of groups of people in power deciding the history of humanity. In a best case scenario, we are simply supposed to be free to determine our own futures, our own progress, what we want out of life. Now, in this particular case, what they're proposing is a sort of collectivist idea that takes personal ownership out of the equation. The little phrase, and it sounds so innocent, is you will own nothing and you will be happy. When we talk about collective ownership, we are often told that the great thing about it is that everybody will own. The reality of the thing is that nobody but those in power own. Now, if you go back just several hundred years, the founding father and first president of the United States, which was essentially a project founded on the idea of human liberty and freedom, pretty much for the first time in modern history, George Washington said, there is no such thing as personal human rights without property ownership. And he said that for several very interesting and important reasons. But the principle is sound. If you are dependent on a greater power for everything, then you are not free. You place yourself as an individual in quite a precarious situation. It was, in fact, the formula for living, the sort of political reality for most of human history. If you look back at a simple setup like the serfs of Europe, this is a group of people who owned nothing and simply contributed to the overlord, who determined what they could and could not have. And they had zero rights. It is the property that you own that actually ensures your rights to a great degree. So while this may sound like a very enlightened idea, sort of a communal, collectivist utopia, there are many problems with this once you start thinking about how it might actually be implemented. And that's what concerns me. It is remarkably easy for smooth politicians to stand up and say kindly sounding things. Now, the sorts of things that we're hearing from the likes of the proponents of the Great Reset all talk about collectivist and communal living and how nobody will own anything. But now consider for just a second, that is already a fallacy. Someone, somewhere, has to own. And in fact, what happens is, if you take ownership out of the hands of a broad-based populace and of many separate entrepreneurs and families and individuals, and you concentrate it into the hands of, say, a few multinational corporations working together with government, well, firstly, that system is, by definition, fascistic. This idea of an all-powerful government and the businesses that work in conjunction with them. It leads very quickly to cronyism, to the types of corruption that we see, particularly in South Africa, where we are so keen on talking about business and government collaborating. And doesn't that just sound like such a good thing? Business and government collaborating. What happens there is you have the people who own the rules, enforce right and wrong, and have a financial incentive to be corrupt, working with the people who have the money and have an incentive to corrupt them. It's a dreadful formula just to begin with. However, what concerns me is perhaps on a bigger scale than that. When we talk about collective ownership, we are often told that the great thing about it is that everybody will own. The reality of the thing is that nobody but those in power own. And that impulse to take away private property ownership and to concentrate it into the hands of a representative government is purely Marxist. I mean, it is the heart and soul of the Marxist idea, which stripped down to its basics is nobody owns property, it is collectively owned. And as I say, of course, the fallacy there is that it is not actually collectively owned, it is owned by those in power. Now, what can go wrong with that? Well, if we look at modern day China, we get a very good example of this one. Modern day China, of course, a bit of a mixed economy. They have prospered to the degree that they've started permitting free trade. However, they are still very much a Marxist society. And they work according to social credit scores. And social credit scores, imposed by law, represent a very chilling idea. Now imagine this, for example. You as a family do not own your home. You do not own what is around you. You do not own your business. The government has absolute control because they are the representative of collective ownership. Now imagine a scenario in which you do something that the government does not approve of. You read a book that it doesn't want you to read. You write an essay or an article that it doesn't like. You create a YouTube video commenting on something in a negative way. Now, those are all things that productive human beings do to critique and build and grow their society. But you can't do it there. And if you do something that the government disapproves of, using these social credit scores, they can ghost you. They can effectively lock you out of your world. And it works because you don't own anything. It is that ownership, that broad-based private ownership, that keeps people free from government tyranny. It is property rights that prop up human freedom. You can go into great depth and philosophy on this one. You can even take property rights down to the level of your thoughts. Are you free to own them? Are you free to express them? Or is the realm of thinking controlled by a collective? Now, of course, all that sounds, it sounds like terrible fear-mongering. But of course, the question for anyone who looks back over history is to ask, could it happen here? Could it happen again? And I think if you do know your history, the answer is it happens surprisingly easily and it happens surprisingly often. When communities play with this idea of collectivist ownership, I would argue that it happens 100% of the time, and that when we're talking about collective ownership and the elevating of the group over the sanctity of the individual, we are dealing with a formula that has been deeply damaging to the human species.
Douglas Kruger is a prolific author of 13 books published by Penguin Random House, including one called Political Correctness Does More Harm Than Good.
Under the Great Reset, what will become of the property people already own?
That's an excellent question, and it's one that I think people are not considering. Now, think again of those words. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. It doesn't allow for you will continue to own what your family has bequeathed down the generations. The simple statement, if we are to take them at their word, is you will own nothing, and you will be happy. Now, that poses some fascinating problems in terms of what communities already own. We, largely around the world, we own our homes. We bequeath heirlooms, family heirlooms to the next generation. You might own a wedding ring. You might own things that you want to give on to your children. And I would argue that that is one of the very best things that we do. Each generation tries to uplift the next generation. This philosophy seems to be saying, instead of doing that, we reset each generation at zero and leave you dependent on a government welfare system. Now, from the most basic human perspective, that strikes me as deeply unhealthy. If the best thing we do is to raise up our children and help them to go further than us, then starting at zero with government dependency every generation, it strikes me as a bit of a chilling idea. If you look at basic stats, human stats, around groups of people living on welfare, you will find that you have disproportionate rates of marital breakup, of family breakup, of alcohol and drug abuse and of interpersonal violence. The stats are way different to people who are self-sufficient, self-sustaining, employed or running their own businesses. So one of the things that I think people are not considering here is under a paradigm in which nobody owns anything, we all become a group of people living under the welfare state. And it seems to me that that is a very good way to do damage to the health and to the psyche of human beings. We don't seem to prosper under such conditions. I concede very readily that we have to help the poor and the struggling among us. That is a Christian, a Judeo-Christian principle. It has been built into Western classical thinking for a very long time. But a welfare state in which you don't do anything, but you live dependent on the government, seems to cause human beings to rot. I don't think it's a healthy scenario. We're proposing it on a global scale.
Coming up after the break, I'll tell you what is considered one of America's ugliest buildings. And it's very close to where you live.
All the while, in this world where we live, there should be more happiness, so much joy we can give.
The Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
Well, we promised to tell you before the break, one of the ugliest buildings in America.
there are a lot of candidates for that one.
It's the Alamo Dome.
Who says it is? I mean, it ain't pretty, I'll tell you. But is this some national poll or something?
No, it's a company out of the United Kingdom. It's a construction supply company. But you got to admit, it is ugly. I mean, I've got a picture of it right in front of me.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it is.
Oh, I know what it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, it is ugly. So it is considered one of the country's ugliest buildings.
Wow.
And the list was compiled by analyzing tweets from around the country. And by the company's estimation, almost 14% of Twitter users found the Alamo Dome to be an eyesore.
Yeah, you would think they would have. I mean, who approve? People approve it. You know, somebody comes with the plans. And, oh yeah, that's beautiful. It ain't beautiful at all.
Now the ugliest.
Embarrassment, to be honest.
And what was voted to be the ugliest building in the country is the J. Edgar Hoover building in Washington D.C.
That's the FBI.
The FBI headquarters. Yeah.
Well, that's a typical Soviet style looking building.
And also on the list, which I disagree with, is the Gold Trump International Hotel in Las Vegas.
Oh, I think that's, I've never been close to it, but I've seen it on the skyline. It's very,
right, right.
Kind of pretty.
Gold. And I know. And also two stadiums made the list, as well as Denver's International Airport. And yeah, it is weird looking.
Wow. You know, we were talking earlier about the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab. I mean, you can just see him goose stepping, can't you? But, you know, somebody wrote, I wish this is original with me, but it's not. Those who warn you about rising sea levels are buying beachfront property.
Exactly.
Yeah.
John Kerry and Barack Obama.
Barack and Michelle. Bought multi-million dollar beachfront properties in, was it Martha's Vineyard or one of those?
Martha's Vineyard.
You know, Martha's Vineyard, of course, where they, you know, they love illegals, but not any. if they're not using a leaf blower, they don't want them in the neighborhood.
Exactly.
Anyway, those who warn you about rising sea levels are buying beachfront property. Those who warn you about COVID are throwing parties and taking vacations, and I might add, eating at the French Laundry in California without wearing masks when you're not supposed to congregate, as Gavin Newsom did.
Mm-hmm.
Those who tell you giving up your guns will make you safe are hiring, have armed security. And then the point is, do you get it yet? Do you get it yet? I mean, the hypocrisy of it is just, and they don't care. They're just bold about it. They don't care. You know, mm-hmm. It's in your face, man, in your face. John Kerry was asked about, well, you say that people should, you know, conserve energy and go green and all this, but you're flying around the world in a private jet. He was actually asked that, not by an American reporter, by the way, by a German reporter, somebody who had the guts to ask him that question. American reporters don't have the guts to ask him that question. And he actually said, well, the important work I do, I just couldn't fly commercially. The important work I do.
Yeah, he's too important.
Yeah, I'm too important
to fly the way we do.
Yeah, not other. You know, I'm more important than anyone else. Basically, is what he said. I'm more important than you. Well, a little good news. Good news. A judge in Kern County, California, Bakersfield, ruled that a bakery owner who declined to make a wedding cake for a lesbian couple and referred them to another baker did not violate the state's civil rights statutes because she was acting in accordance with her belief in biblical principles. The judge said,
I'm
you did not break the law.
Shocked to hear that.
Yeah, the state sued a woman named Kathy Miller, a baker, because they said it violated the Civil Rights Act of California. But the judge said, quote, this is the judge, Miller's only motivation at all times was to act consistent with her sincere Christian beliefs about what the Bible teaches regarding marriage. A win for the good guys.
Wow.
On that one at 8:58, Hill Country Patriot time. Your information station is the Hill Country Patriot. And we've got, coming up, I want to tell you, coming up, what do we have coming up, Allison? Right after the news break.
We have a special guest live in the studio, a personality.
Hill Country Patriot personality, mm-hmm. Who's got some stunning news, absolutely stunning news. I'm not hyping this.
Yeah,
this is absolutely stunning.
Yeah, we learned her incredible story.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that. That will be right after our break, and I'm not hyping it up. It's I am totally sincere. What she has to say, you better be sitting down and get some tissues.
She's telling the story herself because I would cry.
It's Lorraine Lamont. Lorraine will be with us, and you of course listen to her on the Hill Country Patriot every morning.
10 o'clock weekdays.
Yep. So she'll be on right after our news break. And again, what she has to say, get a box of Kleenex. This is absolutely unreal. Well, we're Bill and Allison, the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. And we've got a news break coming up and some important messages for you. But we'll be back before you know it. And it's time for the news.
KRNH HD2, Kerrville, K271CH, Fredericksburg, K2A2BI, Kerrville, the Hill Country Patriot.
Okay, I'm Allison, and that's Bill.
It's still Bill.
we have a special guest in the studio today, although she's not, she's used to being in the studio because she's a host on Hill Country Patriot, 10 o'clock every weekday morning, Lorraine Lamont. And we were having a meeting of Hill Country Patriot people, and Lorraine told us the most incredible story. And we wanted to have her on to talk about it. And I think it's appropriate because today is January 21st, and that's the date that the March for Life is normally held in Washington, D.C., but I guess because this year it's on a Saturday. It was held yesterday. But and I said I couldn't tell her story because I would cry. And I'll probably cry while she's telling it. Welcome, Lorraine.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be on here. You know, I think it's so serendipitous that you asked me to do this, and you asked me to do this at a time, it wasn't even 24 hours. It wasn't even 24 hours. And in 24 hours, literally, I said, I had heard the Texas Right for Life guest that Matt Long had. And I said, you know, Lorraine, you got to tell the story. You really do. You got to tell the story. And I thought, well, you know what? I'll call him or call someone, and then I'll go on someone's show or go some, maybe even on, who knows, even a radio. Hello. And then what?
like you don't know anybody in radio.
Yeah. And then you call. I mean, how perfect is that? Well, yes, it is. It is a very interesting story. And I didn't tell it a lot because it would just, I could see people's emotions. I could see what it would do. It's not the kind of party conversation. You know, pass me the hors d'oeuvres. Let me tell you about an abortion.
No.
Something happens usually there. So I decided that I wanted to do this. And then I think what I call God opened the door. You know, I really believe he opens the door for when he wants you to be able to go places, do things. There it is. It just happened. So serendipitous as it may be. But my story goes back, raised in the inner city of Detroit, of course. A lot of people know a little bit about that. And being raised in the inner city of Detroit, one of the things that I did notice, and of course right now with today, abortion and all that is happening, and right to life, and the way they're just, you know, treating babies as if they're just nothing. They're not even tissue anymore. They're just an inconvenience, period.
And well, and you mentioned how prevalent abortions were among blacks when you were growing up in Detroit.
And that's where I was going. Absolutely. You're right. And so it's almost like you could find an abortion. Doctors were given abortion like revolving doors. Here's the deal. Just like revolving doors. It was nothing. So every doctor, it wasn't like you had to go find a clinic. Every doctor would automatically, wow. It's just not a problem. At least most of them did. And one particular doctor, and I'll say his name now that he's deceased and no one really knows who he is. I think he's, when I saw him years ago, he was in his 90s. So now he's, it's been years ago. But anyway, he was a German doctor, Dr. Yaris. And Dr. Yaris, he would give abortions a lot. My mother had been coming as one of the women going in and out, having abortions and so forth and so on. And then eventually, they didn't trust him because they believed that he was just collecting the government check. And so they would say to him, we need to see the fetus. And this is gross of you. This is going to gross you out. You know, just get ready. You know, buckle up. Put your arms and legs inside of the car. It's always a wild ride. No, you're probably not used to me shouting and screaming as the authentic certified neighborhood girl. But the story deserves this type of ambiance to it. And so I grew up in the inner city of Detroit. My mother, again, had... It was five of us all together, one brother that I never saw. But my mother began to break up, divorces, all kinds of stuff, and we were left kind of raising ourselves. I get to be about 12 years old, and everybody starts leaving home. I don't know what that was about. Everybody starts leaving home. All my older sisters start leaving home. My mother's going through an issue with my stepdad, and she starts leaving home and leaving on the weekends, coming back on Monday. Pretty soon she starts leaving the opposite, not come back at all. For a long time. And so, anyway, so time went on, but I kept lying to the schools and telling them that I had a parent at home. Really, I was signing everything myself. Mm-hmm. And so eventually, I'm 16 years old, getting ready to graduate early. Why? Because in those days, if you went to summer school, you could actually graduate a half a year earlier. Each year you kept doing it, kept getting earlier and earlier. So I did. And so I'm staying at home by myself. The little Polish lady behind me is actually having the owns a house, but she's staying in the apartment upstairs over a garage. And so I knew no one was there, but I was very small now, but I was even smaller then. And then when I knew that I came home one Friday, but only come home on Fridays to get my clothes and go stay at other people's homes so that I could see what a family looked like, having dinner and so forth and so on. I saw a shadow moving when I came home that Friday through the window. I was very afraid of that. I was very afraid, and I says, I don't know if I should go in. And I looked closer, and I saw it was my mother. I was like, oh, yay. So I opened the door real fast, and she says, hey, baby, how you doing? Come on in. You know, and so I know it sounds like it's just like she was just saying good morning to your neighbor, but that's the way it was then. And so I came in, and she said, but I've got something to tell you. And then she starts, she said, but I'm out of cigarettes. I need you to run and get me some cigarettes. Don't everybody die right now. You can buy cigarettes then. And so she said, I want you to go get me some cigarettes. I said, okay. And all the way up to the store, I'm thinking, she says, she wants to talk to me. Wait a minute. What does she want to talk to me about? This is not the time to be mama. You haven't been mama in, you know, in the past 2-3 years. What do you want to know? And so I'm thinking all kind of questions, rusting through my mind. I get back. She sit down. I didn't tell you this part, and I'll tell you this part. She pops, she lights a cigarette, and she hands me one.
And you're 16.
Yeah, yeah. She hands me one, and she lights
she
one.
She introduced you to smoking.
Yeah, exactly. And she opens a can of beer, and she pours it in a little cup, and she says, I know you're smoking. I know you're smoking. You're probably smoking. You're probably drinking, too. I will never forget that. Right now, the cigarette... but the beer I wasn't drinking, but everything just like just went into a maze. Like, okay, what is this? Is this a setup? What's going on? Okay, all right. I'm thinking, all right. And I'm holding the cigarette though, but I'm turning my hands are going back and forth. And finally, I just throw it in the ashtray. I'm looking at her in the face. What is the deal? And she says, you know, I need to tell you something. She said, when I was pregnant with you, I had an abortion. And I look at her. I says, okay, you know, I may be.
What?
Okay, Mom, whatever you're on, you need to stop it, like, right now. Obviously, it ain't this beer. Are you right. She says, no, baby. She says, you know, Dr. Yaros. I says, I know. My sister said, use them. All the people in the black community had used them. He was probably getting filthy rich from, you know, government. Just abortions like a revolving door. And later on, then you could find Planned Parenthood places like that, like better than you could find the nearest Kmart store. You could quickly get an abortion. And so she says, well, one day I went in to get an abortion. She says, and as I had done many times before, she says, and when I went in, she said, he showed me the fetus and whatever, and I went back home. She says, but I kept growing. I says, and she says, and I went back, I called him. Says, Dr. Yaris, I'm growing. Oh, I did nothing's wrong with you. Your body is going to still go through the transitions. That's it's normal. And she said, no, doctor. She said, I really am. All right, you make an appointment. Come on in. So she made the appointment, and she came in. And when she came in, he put her up on the table. And then when he went to examine her, he says, this is too much. Now, I'm just going to go and tell you. This is not worth it. You know, this is a waste of my time, waste of your time. And when he went to examine her, all of a sudden, his chair, which was on wheels, he pushed himself back, and he pushed his back against the wall and did some sort of Roman Catholic German cross sign. I don't know what kind of witchy, whatever he was doing. And he says, do never come see me ever again. You. And the word that he used was something like about, you are voodoo to me. This is voodoo. This is bad luck. And he said that. And then he told her that there was a baby still there. Now, how does that happen? How does that happen? That happened very, very easily because there was a setup, what I call the DS factor, the divine setup. It was meant for me to be born. That baby was me, my mother says. And so what was it? A difference? How many centimeters? What away? Separate sac twins, they called it then. It's another more medical term for it now. But it being a separate sac twin, whoever was at the front of the canal first went out first. I think sometimes someone say that God hid me. One person said God hid me. I think of the Esau Jacob. I think that there was a little warring going on in the belly, and the twins and the one before me fought me, pulled back my heel, and switched places.
Wow.
Yes. That's an incredible story.
Yes.
Incredible story.
I'm alive
story.
Today, and I know that it's God. I call it the DS factor, the divine setup. Nobody can. And when I think of the way they treat lives, and in the African-American community, I mean like water, like drinking water, unbelievable. At this point, I don't know how many millions and millions and millions of babies, 9 point or whatever something, or million, we have actually aborted a nation, and it's increasing. And in my book I'm doing, which is Black by Popular Demand, it's a series, a 5-point series. The first one is Pimps, Politicians, and Crooked Preachers. And I'm going to make them easy reads. I thought it was going to be all one book, but it's really too much. And the second one is going to have a lot to do with Stop Drinking the Kool-Aid, 5 Easy Ways How to Leave the Plantation. And the third one is really going to be Who's Really Killing Black People? You know, from the black-on-black crime to the abortions, who's really killing black people? And I'm on every night at Nightcap at 9, Facebook Live. now. I started it. I did it a couple of years ago with all the crazies, but now I'm on at night. Nightcap at 9, I call it. And so for about 40 minutes to an hour, it's supposed to have only been like 30 minutes, I talk about whatever I crazily screamed that day, break it down in a lower voice, and we talk about it.
Well, and but Bill, why don't you talk about Margaret Sanger? And Lorraine referred to Planned Parenthood. And the reason that Planned Parenthood was established in the first place,
Margaret Sanger
was to kill black people.
Eugenics.
Yeah. Eugenics. As a matter of fact, I don't know if it's still on, but it may be. There is a YouTube channel with her talking to a talk show host, and he says, wasn't there a point in time when you made this statement that, well, you think that you're doing black people a favor? If they're going to grow up and be, she says, well, I just think that if they're going to grow up and be criminals and be put in jail and look at all the things, that's, you know, you're not doing them a favor, but you're kind of saving a lot of trouble. It's. I've got to get that clip, but it's definitely on YouTube. And so, yes, Margaret Sanger, she's rolling in her grave, clapping her hands, because she is still having her vision, her goal is actually being accomplished big time, probably never more than she really thought it could be to mm-hmm. this degree. It is. And when I look at my son, when I met Richard, before I met Richard, I had already had two kids by myself and a single parent. And I remember looking at them and realizing my life had changed because of their life, you know, and that because of them, I could not live the life I continue to live, you know. But somehow in today's vernacular, they get us to believe children are inconvenience. This is a mistake. I don't need it right now. So forth and so on. And when you give me my, I don't want to go off on you. I'm sorry. When you go to my body, my choice, I like want to, you know, I lose it right there, because I think, yeah, listen here, KK, Ray, Ray, Mamie, and anybody else, your choice is to use one of those contraceptives.
Exactly.
Your choice is to stop laying up with people and having partners and all everywhere you go. Your choice is to do that. How about that? And then if you don't want the baby, give it to someone else. Give it. And I love the Right to Life programs. I just want to give them a little plug, because they're finding ways, especially churches, organizations are finding ways how to say, okay, I'll take the baby. Make it easy for you to carry the baby, and we will find a home for the baby. We will help you. This helps you make the decision, you know. So there's been a lot when I think about my life and my twins' life. Everybody say, Lorraine, why do you work the way you work? Why do you get up in the morning, have a nonprofit for 20 years, do a radio station, work on a book, been in 17 countries? I says, well, you know, I think I'm living for two people.
Oh wow. That's great.
Wow. We're talking to Lorraine Lamon.
And Lorraine has more energy than I did at the age of 30.
Lorraine has a program, as I'm sure most people know who are listening, here on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. She's on Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here. So be sure to if you like what you heard now, you'll love it when you listen to Lorraine.
And while we're talking about the March for Life, Tony Dungy, who is a former football coach for the Tampa Bay Bucks and the Indianapolis Colts. He has three biological kids, and as Lorraine just mentioned, he has adopted eight others.
Wow.
And he's being attacked for that, and he's being called a right-wing extremist. And he
adopts babies. He's a right-wing extremist.
Yeah, well, because he was at the March for Life, and he told the crowd that the country's prayerful reaction to Damar Hamlin's collapse during a football game 3 weeks ago was striking, in that the NFL had been actively preventing praying on the field in the past, and the teams got together. I mean, I don't watch football games, but I saw the teams all praying on the field, and he said Dungy said that usually when that happens, the camera is cut away from them because the NFL doesn't want you to see that. And he said, when I was coaching in the 1990s, a few Christian players got together and they said, we want to pray after the games. And Dungy said, we actually got a memo from the NFL office that said, don't let your players do that. If you do, you will be fined, because that's not appropriate. He said, that's a true story.
My, my, my.
But he said three weeks ago, everybody was on that field praying. And they continued the next week at every stadium. And all the NFL teams got together and prayed. And it was amazing. DeMar Hamlin is now out of the hospital. And at the march yesterday, Dungy told the crowd that the nation needs to pray for the unborn in the same way they prayed for DeMar Hamlin.
Absolutely. And you know what, the thing about it, though, I find that in the midst of crises, creativity always rises to the top. I without sounding prejudiced, I think Americans are the most creative people. Really, they are. In the midst of crisis, that's when things rise to the top. When 9/11 hit, do you remember the unity? Not just the unity, the harmony. I mean, no one cared. No one gave any. No one cared about who you were, what race you were, what job. No one cared. Everybody hunkered down together. I would like to get a picture of that caption. When I saw that caption, when they were all huddling in, you know, both teams praying together. Mm-hmm. People in the stands, they said the people in the stands got so loud in their prayers, you could hear a momentum. That was amazing.
Wow.
It was amazing. And yet at the same time, they don't want you to pray in schools. They don't want you to do these other things like that. You know, and it's all against, it's always ultimately, even the abortions, the way that they are, is ultimately is about against God's original intent. God's original design was for his original intent. And so from the transgender to the mutilations, it's about God's original intent for God's original design. He didn't, I hate to sound really gross like this, but it's just like what his name of Al Simpson, the one that he says if the glove doesn't fit, you know, it doesn't.
OJ.
It doesn't. And so here's it. So God didn't make a mistake. Oh. He didn't make a mistake. But what the consistency that I see with the lunacy left, and I explain I define the lunacy left as the Democratic Party that has been hijacked. And I say my mama, my grandmama, yours, and everyone else's who was staunch Democrats know good and well that was not the way that they really, that's not what they expected. That's not the Democratic Party that they stand for.
Oh, exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. It's been hijacked.
The onslaught, it's almost like, do you remember in the Bible when they were about to kill, Moses, when there had been a prophecy that Moses was going to be born, and then also when Jesus was going to be born, the pharaohs and the kings were killing. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I mean, just kill anybody under 2 years old, just whack them out.
Exactly.
I really believe it's annihilation of a generation, because prophetically speaking, I believe there's a generation, the Bible even says it, there's a generation that had not been born yet that should grow up and do exploits. And I tell young people, you are that generation. When I see babies, I say, welcome. We've been waiting on you. We need you now.
Well, stay with us. Lorraine is going to join us after our quick little break.
The Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
:29 is our Hill Country Patriot chime. You're with Bill and Allison and Lorraine. How about that? Bill and Allison and Lorraine show. We like that. We do. We like that. Lorraine Lamont is our very special guest. And Lorraine is on normally from Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning. And you should definitely tune in for her. But we're so honored that you have taken
Glad to be here.
Well,
Saturday.
And Lorraine has a nonprofit.
Yes, I do.
Why don't you tell us just a little bit about that?
About 2003, I started a nonprofit for kids. It's called Art and the Number 2 Heart, and where kids would come after school to get free piano, theater, dance lessons, and every summer write their own shows. The concept really came from the idea that I myself was raised in a juke joint as a little girl. Don't get upset, everybody. I'm not putting your kids in a juke joint. But the music and the dance actually is what saved my life a lot. My grandfather was left with us four little girls for a period of time. Way before I became a teenager. And so he put a wall down the center of the house. He put a bedroom, living room, kitchen on one side. On the other side, we saw all these people coming in with saws and nails and hammers. And pretty soon I saw this shiny bar, and then we saw this really colorful machine. It was a jukebox. And then all of those shiny bottles, we always thought that Jim Beam and those guys and Jack Daniels were famous in history because he had a lot of them. And we would name their names and make games, name the names Jack and John. Make names and, you know, little rhymes with them. Well, he would always push 127 songs on the jukebox when we come home from school. Give us a jug of milk, a loaf of bread, close us up in the room. No one's there. Because no one's there at 3:30 in the day. These things didn't get hot and heavy until 7 and 8 at night. But that was our 45 minutes of after school care. And I saw the music and the dance saved me, saved my sisters. So thus art to heart. So kids come after school. It doesn't,
That's great.
No cost. I raise the money. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. As a matter of fact, little plug, 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 we have the magic in Motown, baby. What is that? Every year we do a dinner, a gala dance, a big event. I put the Tina Turner wig on, do the whole thing. The kids dress up, Michael Jackson, all of this stuff. And we raise money for Art to Heart. And you can simply call 830-792-3338 or go online and go art2heart.org.
Well, and what we forgot to mention is that Lorraine is a singer. She performs, is it every other Saturday?
I was performing.
At Babies?
Yeah, took some time off. At Babe's Babe Seafood Bucket for about 2 years. I did every second Saturday of the month. But we did recently did a festival in Center Point to feed the hungry for Thanksgiving. Or the needy, rather, for Thanksgiving. And I wanted to do it differently. So the people coming and sitting down and eating meals with strangers and things like that. We made it where we cooked the entire meal in a box for you, and you would call, tell us your name, the amount of people that you have, and you would come pick up a complete from turkey to pecan pie, all done and cooked for you. And so when we did that, it took a lot of my time to prepare for that. Did it in 90 days. Who does a festival in 90 days? Father God, Lord, help me. And they were so certain it wasn't going to. You know, it's going to be a flop. It was very successful, even to the point that Adam Levine's Rebecca Loeb came and performed for our little teeny tiny town, San Juan, Texas, yesterday. And we were very happy, packed out the house, but took a lot of my time. And that's when I realized that, wait a minute, I cannot do every second. I can't do the show. Do the Art to Heart. Don't forget working on the book. And please don't forget the radio. Oh, I'm doing a festival. No, I couldn't do it. So I stopped. And so then I told them I'll get back with them in the spring. But no, I'm not performing right now.
Okay.
Well, we've seen you perform, and we miss you, and we hope you do come back soon.
Yes.
Lorraine, I'm sure you have an interesting perspective on this, and I'll read you a little news story here. A commission in the state of California has said there should be reparations for black people, and they're proposing $5 million given to each black person in California. By the way, I did a little research. Let me back up. This is San Francisco. There is a story about California as a whole, but a commission San Francisco said there should be $5 million for each black person, and I figured this out. A little research, there are approximately 55,000 black people in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. 5 million times 55,000 is $275 billion from people who have never owned slaves to people who have never been slaves. And then, you know, I wonder, you know, why not 50 million or 500 billion per person? The California Reparations Committee says no, they only want $233,000 per black person in California. There are approximately 2.3 million black people in California times 233,000. That's $532 billion. California's budget deficit right now is $22 billion, by the way. Wondered what your reaction to these proposals of preparation.
Well, you know, I was about to make a note because I don't want to forget I'm not as young as I act and definitely not as smart as I look. So, here's my deal on that. I have in my opening line of my book, and I know I'm putting a little glitch in there for the book. And one of the thing in the preface of the beginning of the book, the foreword, I say this: let me not be remiss at any given time or anyone mistaken that the atrocities that happened to Africans and black people during slavery time, horrible, horrifying. You cannot even take the time to sit and read it and walk away with a straight face or even walk away. However, that is a ship that has sailed, and I'm no longer on it.
Okay.
I refuse to take it. So, but the reparations part, here's the deal. If all of the money, I mean, I even said this one time, I pick a number. All right, black people, pick a number. Just pick any number out of that. Pick a number. Well, now, when you pick that number, we'll stick with that number. But when you get that number, then we're going to take that number and we're going to deduct every penny, government program, food, every medical, everything that you've ever gotten from the government free from that amount of money, then we're going to go from there. They don't even want to have that kind of conversations, because if we're going to do reparations, if we're going to do, we got to do it not just for slavery, we got to do it for everything. It doesn't stop.
There
it
you
doesn't
go.
Stop. No, it doesn't stop.
There you go.
Exactly. You know, and see, black people weren't the only people that were treated bad. I mean, do you see the Chinese? And I think about assimilation versus integration. Do you see the Chinese jumping around and complaining when they would drop, I don't know how many feet, close to hundreds of feet, whatever, down into the ground to build our railroads? And why they chose their bodies was because of the way that they were, the size that they were, and the longevity of them being able to endure. Living on pitlets,
yep.
Yes. And that they would be tied to a rope, and if they shake the rope, the rope pulled back, they would send the food down. But if the rope didn't shake back, then they would pull a body out. Anybody complaining? No. You know what Chinese and Asians doing? They're coming over here and kicking our butt in economically.
That's
yes,
true.
They are. They assimilate. They don't care about integration. They assimilate. Oh, is this the rules of the game? Okay, let me play these rules and let me maximize it. And they do a very good job at it.
Well, and the thing about slavery that I'm sure Lorraine knows, but probably a lot of people don't know, is that these slaves that were brought over from Africa, they were sold by their chiefs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that they were sold by Africans.
Absolutely. And even now, did you know Africa, up until just, what, maybe 10 years ago, because now I think the Iran, some of the Middle Eastern countries has taken number one. Africa's always been the number one slave trade, still going on,
yeah.
Still going on.
Yeah.
And I tell people often, even in your own community, black people, they know, we all know this, that the police cannot even drive up in your neighborhood without catcalls and all kinds of signs going out. Popo is on the low, get the ho-ho out the way. You know what I'm trying to say? Please. Please, they know. So you mean to tell me that white people are going to get on a boat, come to Africa, and then infiltrate Africa, and you don't see them, and you can't identify them, and they don't know that they're coming? Please, this is what happened. We were sold, and still being sold. Still being sold. Absolutely. Yep. That's why my book, the first chapter I keep saying about this book, and I haven't got it done yet, is Pimps, Politicians, and Crooked Preachers. Yeah. Yeah, and they all have one other thing in common, another P, and that's panderers. That's what they're so reparations. It will not resolve anything. It will not. We'll spend that money. I give the example of equality versus equity and why Martin Luther King and people like that are not looked at, because they no longer fit the narrative. They no longer fit the narrative because they believed in meritocracy and a form of equality, not equity. Equity, equality says equal access. Equity says, I want equal outcomes. No, you can't. You give one person one amount of money and the same amount, they're going to do different things with it. So no reparations, it doesn't work. And it's a way of saying, you owe me for what you did, not did to me, what you did to my fathers, my great. I wish I had brought it. It's a picture of my great-grandfather and my great-grandmother in a woods. And they're stately, they've taken this picture. They've got crisp white shirt, blouses on, puffed sleeves. He's got a hat on, kind of like a tie. She's got a beautiful skirt on. She's sitting on a stump, and she's perched. And then there's my grandmother next to her, a little tiny, in a beautiful little white dress. And I say, what is that on their faces that you see? And what it was is dignity. And I say this all the time. No one steals your dignity. You give it away.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, yeah, it really
very
is.
Very good point.
Yeah, well, this whole thing about reparations and, well, first of all, Allison is part Indian.
I am.
Don't you deserve some reparations,
I look it, don't I?
You do. It's all over you.
Chickasaw.
I'm part Chickasaw Indian.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, actually, you're laughing, and I do see it.
You mean my squinty little eyes.
So, I mean, they moved your tribe.
That's right.
Remember the Trail of Tears?
Yeah, exactly.
Forcibly took your people from Tennessee to Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, was a wasteland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how about reparations for you?
There you go.
How they're going to, okay, which one of your tribes should get the money? Because which Native American tribe should get the money? Because there was Native American tribes that were mutilating and killing other You know, right. So now, how do they get their reparations? Let's go on. Let's take the dollar all the way back to the dime. Take it all the way back. Let's do that. Let's reparations for a Native American. And now they have, you know what they have done with the whole thing, the money that they've given. If you claim that you are, you got this amount of money coming to you. But if you want to give back the land, I hear people, you want to give them back their land. Give them back the land. Okay, then which tribe?
Exactly. Well, as Kinky Friedman said on our show recently, the Indian Thanksgiving prayer is thanks for nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. 9:41. Thank you. I couldn't read the clock. You're with Bill and Allison on a Saturday morning
and
with Lorraine mm-hmm. Lamond, the Bill and Allison and Lorraine show this morning, and we're glad you are with us today.
Good to be here.
While we're still talking about reparations,
sure.
Did you know that Egypt is paying Israel reparations for slavery?
I know.
That's from the Babylon Bee.
Okay, it's not true.
Exactly. It's not true.
Not true.
I mean, really? I mean,
But you know.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Egypt is paying. Okay, that should do it.
Don't the Israelites deserve reparations?
There you go.
That's years of slavery. What about... Too bad Babylon is still around. We can get reparations from them in Assyria.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Goes on and on.
Anybody who can show a relationship, a family relationship, goes back to Babylon or Assyria, they ought to pay reparations to the Jews.
Make your application right now.
Do we have time for a 2-minute cut? The Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, and Lorraine, I want you to listen to this and let us know what you think of this.
There are some people that were talking about reparations in this country. They wanted reparations. And I remember I made this particular liberal so angry at me because I told them right to their face, nobody owes you anything for slavery. If you want to tell the truth about it, it is you who owes. It's you who owes. Why do you owe? Because somebody in those fields took stripes for you. Somebody after those fields were ended and slavery was ended, somebody had to walk through Jim Crow for you. Somebody fought wars and died for you. Somebody lived less than because they didn't have what you have, and they did it for you. There are people in their graves right now. And they are there because they were willing to stand up and fight for you. Those folks on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Carry an American flag. Take that color count. Living in a society that he scarcely acknowledged. Something that he has never known. Living with a bigotry that none of us can imagine. Carried American flags on that bridge. And when they were hit upside the head with nightsticks. And shot with water hoses and knocked to the ground, they got up and picked those flags up and kept marching. And they did it for you. Nobody owes you anything. If anybody owes, it's you. Because after a freedom, you are the one that owes. And what do you owe? You owe it to them to get up off your tail and get to school. And when you get to school, you owe to them to get up off your tail at school and get to work and get some learning in your head. And once you get that schooling in your head and get out of that school, you owe to them to get to work. And then when you get to work and you get married, you owe to them to take care of your children and not let the government take care of your children. It's you who owe. Nobody owes you a single solitary thing.
That's Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Mark Robinson, and I predict we're going to hear a lot more from him.
I think so.
When we come back, we're going to ask Lorraine Lamond what she thought of what Lieutenant Governor Robinson had to say. We'll be back after this quick break.
The Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison.
We certainly are, and we're sometimes wrong.
But we're always right. We're
always right. We're fighting a never-ending battle for truth, justice.
And the American way.
The American way. And we are, as a trigger warning for you, we are non-binary. non-binary here. Non-binary.
No. I like that one. I might get to steal that one.
You may. We can borrow.
Well, you're welcome to.
Non-binary.
We are all a family at Hill Country Patriot.
We are with Lorraine Lamond, who has her own show right here on the Hill Country Patriot at 10 o'clock every Monday to Friday morning. So be sure to join her then. If you like what you're hearing now, you will love her show.
And we really appreciate her joining us.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes, yes. But I will give them a little caution to buckle up.
That is for sure. You just, with Lorraine, you just turn on the microphone and...
That's right.
Put your arms and legs inside of the car. It's always going to be a wild ride.
Yeah, Lorraine is being very calm on our show.
Yes, I am. I purpose to do that when the people ask me on as guests. So when I tell them you can invite me and I act like a normal human being, I don't come out with a whip and a sword, then they can see, oh, my God, she really does. You know, I could not have ran a nonprofit for that many years and have that.
That's true.
Really.
I don't know. When you first came on the air with us, I'm thinking, well, she looks like Lorraine, but
not the same person. Not the same person.
No, glad to have you at 9:50 on our Bill and Allison and Lorraine show this morning. Well, you heard what Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Lorraine, yes, had to say.
Yes.
Wondered what your reaction to that.
I loved it. I mean, I've said it once. I've said it over and over again. If you think for one moment that our fathers, our great 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 grandfathers, and whatever, endured lynchings, beatings, separations, killings, I mean, just atrocity after atrocity, for us to be able to get a welfare check, it's incensing to them. It's a disgrace. I believe that my great-great parents are rolling over in the grave. A lot of everybody's grandparents, rather, are rolling over in the grave when they see a sellout to a welfare check. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Are you kidding me? Listen, Frederick Douglass said this, and I will never forget this. He said, you can just kid in, it says, what shall we do with the Negro? And it was during after the emancipation.
Oh, and he's black.
Yeah. What shall we do with the Negro? And this is why he doesn't fit the narrative, and they don't teach him in black history, because he was a slave, got free, came and went to Europe to live, and came back and ended up serving in the House of Representatives. That should tell you something right then and there. So, but he says, what should we do? He's talking before a big audience. What shall we do with the Negro? And the basic thing, he says, if he plants corn and the corn fails, he says, then he has to learn how to plant it better. If he builds a house and the house caves in, then he needs to learn how to construct it better. He says, so what shall you do with the Negro? You leave him alone.
Oh, that's very good. You know, we have seen his house in Washington, D.C. It's right. Bill, do you remember that? It's right by the White House. Yeah, I was going to say it's right down the street from the White House.
You leave him alone. And so, and this is, I know I'm going off a little bit, but I'll just try to get back. I've got my notes, so I won't. It's my liberal friends. I say the liberals, I love you, you love me. I have liberal friends, gay, straight, in between, and all of them. I do. So did Jesus, so don't get upset with me. But the thing that I'm just flabbergasted at, and that's the fact that liberals, they won't preach what they practice. No, I didn't say it backwards. No, they don't preach what they practice. You know, what they preach to African Americans, people of low income and so forth, you can't get a job, you can't take care of yourself, you need the government, you got to take everything, you can't even get an ID. Now we can't even get an ID. I always walk into the voting stations. And I said, excuse me, I'm late because I couldn't find the ID station. Everybody gets real quiet. Is there a station I can get myself? But the bottom line is that the liberals, they do programs that cripple us, and all while they're doing the programs to cripple us, they got another program on the back end making the crutches so we can limp through life. You know, when I heard that preacher is right on target about that. I made a note here, and that was that, you know, when I walked in, our great-grandparents never, ever intended for us to be fighting for government to take care of us. Bottom line, they wanted to be free from the government. They wanted to have their own stuff. They want to take KK, Ray Ray, take care of your own kids. Always say they expected for that. As a matter of fact, a man and a family was judged by the way they did or did not take care of their kids. I remember that part. I think about it now with my 5 grown children and 16 grand, oldest grandson in West Point. My oldest son went from Detroit to work upstate New York college, and then from Wall Street, work on Wall Street 8 years or so, and then end up becoming CEO of Cummins Engineering.
Oh, wow.
In Philadelphia. And I think about the progress, and I look back and I said to my grandparents and my great-grandparents, you know, we're doing it. We're doing it.
That's right.
We owe them something. We owe that. They fought, died, bled for that. They really did. But we want, no, to sit down and get a welfare. It's an insult to my intelligence. And that's why I'm upset when it comes to hiring people, even just for race alone. You know, we got people sitting at the table, no brain at all, just go show up and be black. And now I call it a black supremacy. And black supremacy is that I can do stupid, dumb things and get away with it. Got Sheila Jackson trying to pass a law, what, that says that white people can't say anything negative to a black person? Excuse you? Well, then, okay, what you going to do about the ones where black people are calling each other horrible names? All racist acts that I've ever had, it's always been blacks against me. Absolutely. Blow your mind on that.
Well, I was going to say, they don't like you because you're conservative.
And no, exactly. And so
you're a Christian.
And which was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
When I walk in, here I am, raised in the inner city of Detroit. Automatically, if you're black, you're born a Democrat. You don't have a choice. It's a seal on your forehead. You don't see it, but it's there. The D is for dumb, but it's other things too. So I walk in, and I vote, and I was proud. I was proud to vote Democrat. I was proud to vote. I was just what it was. I was proud to vote. Let me get that straight. And then I walk out, and I live like, I take care, I got my own house. I walked into the welfare office and told the welfare office, I remember, after they helped me get a job, and they get me in a program, it's called Women in Need. After 90 days, if you finish this program, you could work at one of the major companies, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, New York Life. They had them all set. They were going to take 25 women from each to be able to go. And I chose Blue Cross. I'm making money. I got a job. I got a raggedy station wagon. I walk into the welfare office, and I say to them, literally, I said, you know, guys, I don't think I need this anymore. You would have thought that I said I killed the Virgin Mary and I got an AR-15 right now. Jesus, they call first. She says, just 1 second. And the supervisor comes in. You know, we're real proud of you. That's a very nice thing that you've done. But you don't want to be off the welfare. Yes.
Wow.
They did too.
Wow.
And then I says, no, I don't. I can make overtime. I can take. I got a car. I got the first generation having a house of my own.
Wow.
Of my own.
That's really something.
I got my house. I'm taking care of my kids. Yeah, I even took two more kids in my home. My sisters were on drugs. I ended up losing all my sisters. I think I may have told you that. It's five of us, and I became the only one alive. You can always make an excuse. You can always make an excuse. So so when I, next thing I know, they just, I had to literally use a few choice words, and it wouldn't come to Jesus now. Get me off of this crap, hallelujah. I don't want to be on it. So then finally, after they cut me off, I went and sat in the car. And I thought to myself, what just happened? Until I got a phone call. When I called my son, I said, son, don't forget, when years passed. And I says, you can vote now. And he says, well, Mom, what do you mean? I says, yeah. He says, I know. I said, but don't forget to vote Democrat. And then he gets real quiet. He said, can I ask you, Mom, why do I have to vote Democrat? And I said, son.
Because you're black.
Because they're for the little guy. And he said this back to me. Can I ask you another question? How long do we have to be little? Mm. So for years, I walk in and vote Democrat and walk out and live like a conservative and a Republican. How asinine is that?
Well, Bill, tell that.
Okay, I was about to. A man named Benjamin Fernandez, nobody remembers him, the first Hispanic ever to run for president. Okay? And he said, never forget, he said, I grew up in the barrio in South L.A. Okay? And he said, we lived actually in a boxcar. And he said, when I get old enough to vote, I didn't know what I should do. So I asked my friends and my family. Well, they said, well, you got to vote Democrat, of course. And I said, why? And because the Republicans are the party of the rich man. And Benjamin says, where do I sign up?
And if we want to continue to blame and look at it, I know that I know that my great-great-grandparents are rolling in the grave, that we are fighting for a welfare check, fighting for reparations. And again, it's going to be always tied to something. The more noose around your neck, you know, when you feed an animal and a trough, he never has to look in your eyes. He never has to look up at you because all he sees is one project, one program, one trough after another. Keep your head bent down now, Sonny, and keep eating from the trough. That's how I feel. You know, and I refuse that. I refuse to be that way.
Lorraine Lamont is our very special guest. She's on every day right here on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station, at 10 a.m. Monday through Friday.
And 9 o'clock at night, nightcap at 9, okay. Facebook Live.
How do they find that?
They just go to Facebook and put my name in, Lorraine Lamont, okay. And it'll come up and you'll see me.
L-E-M-O-N.
And my website, by the way, I have a website, which is LorraineLemon.net. And all of this information is on my website. Right. So Lorraine, LorraineLemon.net, and now I also have a YouTube channel, which is Best Speaker, H-E-R, Speak Her, 2023.
Very good. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not unto your own understanding. Acknowledge Him in all your ways. He will direct your paths. Allison, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Bill and Allison Show and Lorraine.
Thank you, Lorraine.
And tune in with Lorraine Lamont at 10 o'clock Monday through Friday.
KRNH HD2, Kerrville, K271CH, Fredericksburg, K2A2BI, Kerrville, the Hill Country Patriot.